Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host. Man, I can't tell you what a headache is until I log on and try to do this show. A headache is a headache. And I don't even have time to do my opening because I'm like a minute behind. You know, and when I bring in my guests, I always tell them, come in at least 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes ahead of time, just to iron out the kinks. Man, this shirt was so wrinkled, it took me almost 20 minutes tonight. Just really starting to piss me off. But we're going to have a great show tonight. Got a fabulous musician on the show. We're going to be touching and talking about a lot of things going on and with his career, the Houston music scene, just a lot of things. Going to be real informative. To get us started, I always say something, you know, to clean up a mess that I might have made. And I did make a mess in some people's eyesight 2 weeks ago. And I just want to say that I ain't backing down. I stand on what I said. Texas Southern University, TSU, my alma mater, well, I'm a twice Tiger, Grambling State, TSU. But TSU, I ain't backing off of what I said. Y'all wrong for going and getting that little charter school and playing them for your homecoming game so you can win. Bottom line. Ain't nobody heard of no North American University. Online college. Them dudes ain't get them uniforms till 11 o'clock and the game started at 2. So stop saying that you really beat somebody for your homecoming. And I ain't bagging down Chatterbox, Dan Wade, none of y'all. Chitty Bill, whoever. I ain't bagging down. I said what I said, and I ain't moving. Now, let's get on with something else. We all sports. Tonight, Tuesday night is the Musician Spotlight Night, and tonight I have a very awesome musician that's joining me tonight. We're going to be having plenty more, but this brother here, he's doing his thing, got mad skills, and we're going to touch on everything. His name, without any further introduction, his name is Ronnie Coleman Jr. What's up, bro?
What's going on, big brother? How you doing?
Oh, man. They cracking my nerves, man. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine. Perfect.
All right. Cool. Man, it's a pleasure for you to come on, man. I'm honored to have you as a guest.
I'm honored to be asked to be a guest.
Yeah, hey. And you know, I thought of something crazy, man. We're going to touch on this a little bit later on in the broadcast. We were talking earlier, and I started thinking about something later. And I said, I got to tell him about this because I don't think you remember. You might, but you might not. But let's jump it off, man. I see my listeners. Thank y'all for coming in. If you have a question or a comment, want to talk to Ronnie, say hi, whatever. Call in number 319-527-6722.
All right.
319-527-6722. Ronnie, give them a little background about yourself.
Say it again.
Give my people a little background about yourself.
I'm Ronnie Coleman Jr. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, you good.
I'm Ronnie Coleman Jr. From Houston, Texas, by way of Diboll, Texas. Multi-instrumentalist, singer, producer, artist, barber, chef, husband, father, world traveler, just an all-around good old guy that loves God and likes to make people happy with good music and good food and great grooming. Love to help people. The only guy in Houston's history to do a jazz DVD record. And a receive a proclamation at the same time. Charitable, philanthropy, everything that we do, man, it's all a part of me.
That's good, that's good. And you just said something. This man said he from Diboll, Texas.
Yes, sir. Straight up 59
North. Oh, man, you ain't got to tell me nothing about Diboll, man. That matter of fact, that's one of the places you need to tip light when you rolling through there. Because they,
yeah,
will,
yeah,
stop,
yeah,
you. They will,
yeah,
stop you. Mess up your
they
driver
no problem
in a heart. That's it. And if they stop you, 9 out of 10, you ain't leaving right away. Man, I'm going to tell you a story about that. You know we talked earlier. Yeah, you know I talked to you earlier. We talked about,
right,
you know, back when I got in the game at an early age. And, man, there used to be a club in Diboll, man. And back in the day, I was did a
Family
year with Lattimore. Lattimore. Now, you know how long ago that was. Lattimore.
Yeah, that was at the Family Affair.
You already know. And man,
yeah,
this was the crazy part. I did a gig with Johnny Taylor. And,
wow,
man, the owner and Johnny was real tight, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember his name, but he was at the funeral. He was,
right,
at the funeral, man. And he got, man, got the cussing in the churches. Yeah, man.
Believe
good
it or
time,
not, that,
man,
that building is, that building has been a church for about 20 years now. It's a church.
Are you serious?
Yeah, that,
man,
that's a church. That's been a church for about the last 20 years.
Man, yeah, they was in there. They was in the back counting the money up, man, whatever, and the band was drinking up the liquor, and old girl went and told, oh, boy, Johnny came out there. Well, I don't want to put that out, but, man, we sit down and talk about that at the ball one night. But, yeah, that was a spot, man. Well, the old landmark in Diboll, Texas. Matter of fact, my neighbor from Diboll, man. And so I knew about Diboll even as a little kid. As a little kid, man, I knew about it. Yeah, man. That's cool. So when did you hit Houston, man?
I grew up here, and then I moved away and came back in 2006 to go to Barber College. And I've been here ever since. Yeah, I'm from here. I started.
So while you were in
mm-hmm.
how did it come about for you to decide that you want to dabble in music and pick up an instrument?
Well, I started here in Houston first playing at church. And classical piano as well. I started drums in church at my home church here, Christ Temple, Lockwood and Kelly. That's where I'm from. You know, I went to Bessie Ross, right there off Cavalcade, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
then when I moved with my pops, I just did school band stuff, and, you know, picked up gigs and whatever else I could. I've been playing professionally since I was a kid. And then when I moved back to Houston, I came for the purpose of going to barber college. It wasn't even on my mind to really be a professional musician. But through the year, it took me to finish barber school. The music stuff took off, man, and I was playing drums with some of everybody. Joe Carmouche was the big brother that really put me in the game and gave me my opportunity, and I was everywhere with him. And then that went from playing drums with Joe to playing keys with Joe. And everybody knew I played drums and keys, and then people found out I sang too. So it wasn't no use in going back to Diboll after that, man. Yeah, I'm here where the money was going and the milk and honey was flowing, so it wasn't no use in going back to the family. So I stayed, and everything else has been great since then.
That's cool, man, and that's – that's something that I was going to tell you about that was funny. Man, and I keep so many late hours and do so much. And I think this was right after I got sick, man, or right before. I can't remember, but we were doing a gig at Emmett's with James Williams. And, man, this is a guy. I was playing at this church. And I needed a sub one Sunday, and somebody recommended this dude. and I thought it was you talking to you like it was him, and you say, man, you must don't know who I am. And I tried to play it off. I'm like, I know who it is, but I really didn't, because I'm like, dude, I know I'm on keys, but he on drums tonight. And I think it's this other dude that I still don't remember his name right now. I think his name was Mike. And, man, I got y'all mixed up. Because I said, man, you was playing with Pee-wee the other night. And you like, man, you must don't know who I am.
Yeah.
I thought about today. I said, man, that just showed, man, I didn't know you as a drummer. I always knew you as a bad keyboard player. But, you know, that's what's funny, man.
A lot of people is like that. They know me. It's really generational. The older guys in the jazz scene that I was with, you know, Ernest Walker, Kyle, Joe, all those people, they know me, you know, Ron Cole, Jerry Calhoun, they know me as a drummer. And then you go down 10 years, they know me as a keyboard player. Then everybody after that know me. And some of everything depending on what the gig is on. Cause I done gigs with different people, and I'm on a different instrument every time I play with them.
Yeah. That increases your value, man, you know, as a musician.
And that was the point.
So that's, yeah, exactly. That's the thing, man. Once you establish yourself, you know, to play multiple instruments, man, you know, it's unlimited. Unlimited.
Yeah, I never wanted to be the guy that couldn't get a call for a gig because the spot was filled. If you got a keyboard, if you got a keyboard player, I can play drums. If you got a drum and a keyboard, I can play bass. If you got bass and drums, I can play keys, or I can sing. I can do whatever.
Exactly. And then here's something else, man. I had known you for a while, and then all of a sudden it turns out, man, that I used to work with your mom.
Yeah.
When you told me who your mom was, and I'm like, he's like, man, my mom. I'm like, who's your mom? No, I was at Windsor, you know.
Yeah.
Been there for a minute. Yeah, so that's crazy, man, how,
sure.
You know, when they say it's a small world, it's a small world, for real.
A whole time in Windsor. That's when I didn't live.
Blood.
I was in the country then.
When she was
at Windsor, I was in the country.
And that's crazy, man. Because I believe. Let's see. I think she came in like 99, 2000, somewhere right up in there. Around 2000, and man, she immediately made a huge impact as a praise and worship leader, and some vocalist period. Did some work on our CD, Welcome to the Village, all that, man. So that's crazy. When they say small world, you know. Matter of fact, Leon Lewis is probably one of my best friends, man. You know,
and Leon is also a client of my barbershop.
he'll be on here too. He'll be on here too, man. Eventually, that's my.
Yeah, they just left. They just left my shop Saturday.
Him and the boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's my dude. Okay, so as most musicians did, they start in a church.
Right.
What made you venture out? Out of the church.
Mm-hmm.
What made you venture out of the church to work on different forms of music?
I would say what made me venture out was the fact that I love different forms of music. My pops always had different styles of music around me. Now, I was more versed in different styles than he was, but it was one, my love for music, and wanting to soak up anything I could from any style. Also, responsibility made me be able to soak it up because I had kids early, so you got to provide and take care of your business. So if you're a musician, you can be the best one you can be. You're going to learn every style that you can. You know what I'm saying? I had to learn everything from salsa to merengue to reggaeton to la cumbia to some of everything, man, and I played it all. Jazz, R&B, pop, you know, different styles of soul music, blues, everything. So I it goes back to what I said earlier. I didn't want to be the guy that I couldn't get the call for the gig. So I sat and I listened and I learned as much as I could to be the biggest sponge I could to handle my responsibility as a young father and just as somebody that just genuinely loved music. I mean, all forms, all styles, all types. I mean, my first rock band that I was ever in on tour was a little band called Fantastic Enemy. And I was like 17, 18 years old, 19 at the oldest when it ended, you know, playing rock music. And then the very next day, I'd be playing gospel. And, you know, another day after that, 2 days after that, I'd be playing straight ahead bebop and swing. The day after that, I'm playing symphonic and orchestra music for, you know, the college I was at. So just being a deep lover of music as well as wanting to handle my responsibility. You know, I was one of the few cats at the college I went to that got the gig with my professors on the weekend. And it was an honor to get that call. And, you know, I would do, you know, gigs with them and they'd be like, hey, do like what we did the other day in class, you know, whatever, and I can make $150, $200 a night back then at 17, 18 years old.
That's a lot of money.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's a lot of money. Yeah. You know, you can buy a lot of pamphlets and pull-ups with that. So, you know, I would be gigging through the week, Christmas parties, you know, all sorts of whatnot with them. And, you know, at 17 years old, you make $1,000 a week gigging with your professors. You know, you do your thing.
You can slide a herringbone or a rope in there, too.
Yeah. Straight up.
Yeah, Mike. Get your pair of J's, you know, all that when you're making that kind, man. Like we talked earlier, I started, you know, when I was 16, and it's crazy because I didn't have a kit. So I started with two Roadrunner lunch kits. Those were my snares. And then I had the Baskin and Robbins gallon milk crates. And I would beat the bottoms off of those, but then I learned how to put duct tape on them and then tear off the cardboard from the clothes hangers. And man, that was my kit, dude, my house. And you know, once I got the foot rhythm together and just kept working. And say my dad was listening to, you know, blues back then, B.B., Bobby, you know, and I just learned it. So when I got to high school, you know, it's up and down for that because my teacher was well-versed in the bottle. And that was the good thing. But my peers, you know, that was another issue. But I still loved what I loved and did what I did to where, you know, I just happened to, me and my boys was walking home one day and we started to get a burger in this joint. And it was a blues joint next door. And just went in there and started playing on the kit. You know, and the band came in, some old cats, blues. They started, you know, warming up, setting up. And I sat in, and next thing you know, man, they gave me a gig. There actually was the drummer that hired me first. And he could sit there and drink while I played. Yeah, so my band teacher got hip to it. And he would lie to my mama and tell her he holding me late for concert practice. He would sit there and look out for me, but then he'd take a little piece of my change. But still, I got to play. So I can say, you know, 16-year-old kid, and you, at that time, man, I was getting like $35, $40 a night. You know, I'd get him 10. That's enough to get him a bottle back then, Swellers or whatever, you know. And then I'd keep the rest and stack it up by the weekend. So I'd go buy that Polo. I go get that Lagerfeld, you know, and finally I had to get a kit, and I lied to my mom that I was playing the church, and she bought the kit. And, you know, man, look here, that kit went everywhere.
Straight up.
It went everywhere, but say that's how we had to get in, and we did. Yeah. Where did you go to college?
I went to Angelina College in Lufkin.
Oh, you went to AC?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Okay. See, I know all about that, man. I know all about
that. Yes, sir. I am a Roadrunner, baby. I am a Roadrunner.
Okay. Yeah, I know about AC. So, yeah, man, so you got up there and you kept playing, and like you said, you had miles to feed and, you know, behinds to cover. And what made you decide, well, I'm going to jump into this barber thing?
Well, I've been cutting hair since the seventh grade, side hustling, and, you know, my pops, up until that point, was a single pops raising me and my brother. And, you know, it became a little side hustle thing because my pops used to give us these horrible chili balls with no blend because he was hurt on, you know, my pops got hurt on disability. So, you know, he was doing the best he could with no money. So we had some little Walmart clippers, and Saturday cuts. And he would give us these whack, horrible highball, no blend, no fade, just a chili bowl, and try to get you a part that'd be an inch and a half wide. And at that time, I was undersized, man. All other kids that hit puberty before me. So you get tired of getting your head messed up on Saturday, and then you got to fight at the bus stop on Monday. So one Saturday, I just decided I was going to get up early and get the clippers out of his bathroom, go to my bathroom, because we stayed in the trailer house. Then I had one end with my little bathroom. He had his end with his bathroom. When I took the clippers and cut it myself, and I did a good job. My very first time, I looked even all over with the guard on, the edge myself up, all that. And, you know, he thought I had stole some money and went and got a haircut. I was like, nah, I really did this myself. And it took me having to physically make him come to my bathroom and show him the hair on the floor for him to really realize that I really did just cut my own hair and it looked good. So that, you know, as a form of quote-unquote punishment, I had to cut his and my brother's. And then that turned into a little hustle, cutting my uncle and my cousins. And I was doing like $5 haircut because I wasn't that good. I couldn't fade yet, all that or whatever. And on through life, man, through high school and other jobs that I've had, even college, when I became a young adult and had a real, you know, full-time job, I was cutting hair in the break room on check days. And sometimes my checks, my money cutting hair in the break room would be more than what I would take home from my checks. I'd just be in there busting heads all day. As long as I cut the boss or the supervisor first, he didn't care how long I was in there. And so, you know, that went into that. Then I just decided, man, once I started cutting people when I was working for the city of Diabol, it's like, man, I enjoy cutting hair. And so my goal, you know, was always to be a musician and cut hair and to cook, which is all I've always loved to do. So I decided to come lead a full-time job that I had at the city of Diabol. It wasn't paying worth nothing, no way. And I struck out, came to Houston January 10th, 06 was my very first day of barber college, and I ain't turned back since then. It's been rough as sandpaper sometimes, but, I mean, I'd rather be here than not.
In the dead-end town where you can only grow so far, man, you know.
Man, you can't even grow. that's the thing. Then that,
now,
that
I
little
go.
Old time.
I said go.
yeah,
go.
You can go through it. That's about it. You know what I'm saying? When I just went home a couple weeks ago, and in the middle of town, man, when I was there, it was like 6,000 people. Now it's like 4,500, 5,000, man. And stuff that got so bad in that little town. It's like, man, what are y'all doing? Cousins shooting each other, people pulling up on folks, and everybody broke. So what you robbing? You know, you robbing folks that's got less than you. Everybody broke. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's dumb. You know, so I at that time, I had saw the writing on the wall well before anybody else was even looking up. I had already seen the top of the wall, and I dipped so I could be able to provide a better life for myself and the children that I had. And, you know, that's what I did. And it was the greatest decision I've ever made thus far. I mean, it's like I said, it's been hard at times. At the time I don't want to give up, sometimes I did give up. But I damn sure didn't go back there, and I'm glad I did.
Hey, did you go to the barber college over there, OST?
I went to Texas Barber College when it was on Richmond.
Okay.
Between Spartan and Gessler. Yeah,
okay.
Texas Barber College.
Back in the day, I used to go to the one on OST, and I remember this guy from my block, man, from my hood. he saw me in there one day, and he cut me, man. But he didn't have no clip, no guards. And, man,
yeah.
When I'm talking about plugged and nicked me so bad, and my so-called homeboy sitting there watching and laughing. But, you know, most barbers, well, all barbers, they cut your left side, then they turn the chair, then they step around to the right. This dude would make sure my chair didn't turn so I could see that mirror. And when he finished,
wow.
Man, I hollered at him, come on, man, come on. So I put my hat on, and I'm trying to leave, and the lady was like, take that hat off. I'm like, nah. She's like, take the hat off. I didn't realize back then dudes would kick down the barber students, extra change to put multiple parts in the head and not pay for it up
yeah.
front. So she thought I was trying to chill out of there without paying for the parts. Man, I took that
yeah.
hat off. She said, give me the money back. And he going to fix this. I'm like, no, I don't want him touching me. So they got shit to finish me, man.
Wow.
Man, my mama had to give me an alcohol rub down when it was all over. But, you know, yeah, and then I, you know, eventually I learned to cut my son out because that was just a thing to bond on after watching Boys
right.
in the Hood. But
right.
that was the thing. But your dad, you say as a form of punishment, but really, that was, I think, a lesson in putting it together. You know,
nah.
you cutting him.
I can tell you what.
You know, but then, you know.
For him, he's that's the one thing he's publicly said. It was never about no putting it together because my pops wasn't a cat. He had no plan for me. I just, you know, as long as I didn't go to jail, look. Come up licking on another boy. He didn't care. But yeah, me that was a punishment. That was a real life punishment,
man.
For me, for him, for to be able to cut him and my brother now, which I didn't care. You know,
hold
I was just coming
up
no skill.
So your pops was a sore loser. You decided
oh, yeah.
you was done with the chili bowl, and he like, how dare this dude don't want the chili bowl that I'm putting on his skull. And he's like, hey, man, well, then I just had to ride through the fire on this. I'm sick of your cuts.
Yeah.
I'm sick
yeah.
of your cut. My dad used to
yeah.
take me to Mr. Foster, and he would give me a crew cut. And
yeah.
I would hate it, but then guess what? That's back when the shag was popular. Then
yeah.
I find another barber, and I'm able to go to the barber shop on my own. Now everybody going with the fade, the Cassius Clay look, you know.
Yep.
But when it wasn't popular, I was getting it, like you say, showing up at school, looking like Cassius Clay when everybody else got the shag or the Jerry Curl or whatever. And then my mom, you ain't putting no chemicals in your hair. It'll make you crazy. Something already wrong with you, you know.
Yep.
So I had to tough it out, man. I had to tough it out, too. One of them things. All right, so we need to establish keyboard player, drummer, barber, and the cooking comes into play. All right?
Yes, sir.
This dude is multi-talented, y'all. And the reason I want to touch on the barber is because I remember doing after the hurricane and all
the
that. Horrible. I think it was the hurricane or something. Yeah, man, and you took it on yourself to go out cutting hair.
Yeah.
Looking out for people that just didn't have it, you gave your time and your talent to help those less fortunate than you. And I commend you on that. That's you know, something strong. What put that in you to go do that?
At the time, man, my fiance, who's now my wife, and I, at the time, we was at my crib on the north side when I stayed over there. And I just looked at him one day and said I wanted to go cut hair because it was for me, it was a no-brainer. I've done a bunch of career days and stuff at school, and it's something I've always told the kids. One of the questions they would ask is, how do you feel? What do you do? Impacts the community. And my answer is always this: I'm a barber. How many people have you ever seen get arrested with a fresh haircut? And the answer is always none. I said, because when you get a haircut, you're trying to get into something, but trouble ain't it. So if I can go where people are already displaced, feeling crazy, you know what I'm saying? Some of them have lost everything. They done lost whatever they done lost. I'm fortunate enough to, I was blessed. I didn't even lose power. I didn't lose nothing. You know what I'm saying? But if I can go out here and use my chair and my hands and my skills and put a team together with some people that can come down here with me and help people look good, feel good, trouble ain't the thing you finna get into. You know what I'm saying? In the 2 days we were there, we did 352 haircuts for free. And we did everything you could get in the barbershop except for straight razor shave, because we didn't want to risk the chance of cutting somebody with a razor in an already sensitive situation. But, man, I had some braiders, some ladies that were flat ironing hair. I put a team together, some barbers, about six barbers out there. It was four the first day. By the second day, I had two more barbers reach out and join me. And we just took all it, George R. Brown, man, and we really turned it into a black establishment. I had a radio out there. The police came in, set up right across from where we was. They was laughing, having a good time. I ended up cutting a great deal of the police out there. You know what I'm saying? And they were telling me that some of the people that I had cut and groomed while we were there were some of the guys that they were having, you know, issues with. And after they got a haircut, man, they were helping the police, you know, keeping people in line, you know, loving on folks. It wasn't no issue because people didn't, you know, once you get a fresh haircut, you look good, you feel good, you ain't trying to get in no trouble. You're trying to have a good time and make the best you could out of a bad situation. And that's what we all was doing. And I was blessed through my wife, you know, and the mayor to get a proclamation to my home holiday behind that, man. And we were on TV and CNN and Good Morning America and BBC and literally every publication you could think of, even places in China and Mexico and Brazil and Australia and London, England, Germany. Local news, Channel 2, KHOU, Channel 11, Channel 13, KTRE in Lufkin, all the way in Seattle, Washington, Detroit, Michigan, St. Louis, New York, Good Morning America, Great Day Houston, Late Night TV, Washington Post, the New York Times front page, all of that, man. We were there, man. We were just trying to do stuff. Yeah, literally everywhere, man. And so, and it was crazy because people started seeing me and was sending it to me and finding me on Facebook and finding me on Instagram and shooting it, you know, to my godmom and my mom and my wife. And, you know, I didn't do it to be seen. I didn't take no camera crew down there. I ain't do none of that. And it's crazy because that's stuff that I'd already been doing. I've been going down cutting the homeless hair for free right there where under 59 where Fiesta used to be. When I pull up all the time, I got pictures and videos that I never post, man, that we'll go down there and cut their hair for free weekly. You know what I'm saying? To the point where the homeless had become my friends, to the point where when my wife was out with her homegirls one night, it was a group of homeless guys watching out for them. She didn't know who they was, but I knew who they was, you know. And just making sure people who, you know, just because you may not live where you think you should or people think you should, you're still a person, man. So we were just showing love. We'd go out there and take food and snacks and drinks. And I'd take my barber chair out there and my wireless clippers. And I would be cutting for hours, man. And so when we did Hurricane Harvey stuff at George R. Brown, man, it wasn't nothing out the ordinary. It's stuff that I've been doing for years, you know. And I just got a chance to be seen doing it, which, to be honest, I didn't want to be seen. I wasn't trying to do it to be seen. I was just trying to be a blessing, man. Cause, you know, what you're doing privately, the Lord will reward you openly. So, you know, that's what it was for me.
Yeah. When I saw it, I was like, man, you've done it more than just that one incident, you know.
Man, so I've done it. I've been doing it for years.
Exactly. So it's just in you, man, and I heard, you know, you mentioned your pops multiple times. I know you lost your pop last year. And
February 5th.
My deepest condolences to you. I lost my dad, man, back in 04. And, yeah, it was something, man, to, you know, to lose somebody that you, you know, basically, I mean, they seated you. They brought you here, you know.
Yeah.
And then my, and you carry his name, too. So,
yeah.
And then I lost my mom last September. It's been a year
right,
now.
I remember.
So,
yeah,
so I understand that, man. What is it about your dad? When you sit back and just, because you did a post the other day. I think that was yesterday, wasn't it?
And, was Saturday. Saturday was his birthday.
Saturday was his birthday. Okay. I don't be on social media like I used to, but I caught it. Man, what is it about your dad that in one of your worst times you can actually think about him and it'll just crack you up, man? I mean, in a good way, in a happy way.
It's a couple of reasons, man. When I did my live, my Merlo Music Live CD DVD joint in 2018, it came out 2019. I got a song on there called Big Boy Strut, and I wrote that song about myself because I'm not no small frame guy. You know what I'm saying? I'm kind of husky. I ain't no kind. I'm a big dude. And it's one of them joints.
Bro,
where
you fat, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Ain't no shame.
I'm gonna take it.
Ain't no shame
at all.
And we eat.
Straight up. Very well. I wrote that song, and at the DVD, I was explaining to the crowd, you know, think about a big dude walking down the street that's well-dressed, smelling good, looking good, and he walked with rhythm, whatever, da-da-da-da-da. And when my pops heard the song, he didn't even know what the song was. Like, my sister had to show him, my baby sister had to show him, you know, how to look the song up or whatever. And that was his favorite song off that record because he was a big guy, too. He just thought that I wrote that song about him. And I didn't have nothing to do with it. He argued me down. I know you wrote that song about your old man. Oh, and he don't call it Big Boy Strut. He's a Fat Man Walk. That ain't the name of the song, first of all. And that ain't got nothing. Yeah, dude, you wrote Fat Man Walk for me. I know that's my jam. You wrote that for me, Daddy. That ain't have nothing to do with you. You wasn't even dealing with me at that point when I wrote this song. Yeah, well, that's for me. All right, Daddy, whatever you say. You know, that was one instance, you know, that, I mean, he argued me down like I stole the Lord's Supper, that was his. No, sir, that had nothing to do with you.
Hey, bro, I'm finna trip you out seriously, for real. Okay. You know, my son, you know, he's been in hospital since March 23rd. And one of the things that I make sure I do, because I'm always with him, is music is his thing, man. He loves music. And, you know, every kid listen to whatever, the hip-hop stuff and all that. So whenever we would ride in a car, when I would go in the store to do whatever, he would change the music, put it on his, you know, Bluetooth. And, yeah, and he'd play, you know, I'm in the hand, and I'm like, man, you understand that junk. So one day, we had dropped my daughter back off at school, and we was headed back to Houston, and I'm the type, I don't drink coffee unless I'm just dead tired. So I stopped at McDonald's to run in some coffee. I came out, and my son was listening to Take the A-Train. So I'm thinking, oh, man, he saw me coming back out, and he couldn't get the music back where he wanted it. So I'm like, what is he like? That's mine. So after that went off, he hit an Art Tatum tune. I'm like, so, man, where you get this music from? He's like, it's on my phone, Dad. I listen to this, too. So I'm like, shoot, my dude, right? So it tripped me out. I'm saying that to say this. I play music for him daily, and sometimes mom be tripping, and the doctors and the therapists, everybody, no, play what he likes, play what he listens to, because that's therapeutic for him, right? So,
right.
I mean, I've had doctors that ain't even dealing with him walk by and back up, and they'll come back and say, you know, wow, nice stuff, man. And it's crazy that you said that because, man, if people really knew how much music plays a part in so much stuff, right?
Right.
And, yeah, and guess what one of his favorite tunes is?
That's funny.
You can guess.
Yeah.
And remember I told you earlier I was trying to download it, but I didn't want to tell you what song it was.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's
and
funny.
Then you tell that story about your dad. Alright. How crazy is that, bro?
That is hilarious.
And that's probably my favorite on that project.
Yeah,
you know,
that song right there has got a lot of play around the world. A lot of love for that song. And it's that's people's favorite. That's funny.
Bro, when I'm on the track walking, I'm jamming that. I'm going to tell you, that Kyle Turner, Rap Tight, man,
yeah.
I'm killing him. When I really feel, you know, and then 88 Ways, when I'm really, really... you know, trying to get to the end, that last mile, and then I feel like, man, I could probably do one more. Them three going to play.
Yeah.
Them three going to play to get me where I need to go. Yeah, and I didn't even think he would bring that one up, dude. You know, I didn't think he would bring that one up. And I just left my son right before this. And I was jamming
wow.
that, man, and he got the... You know, he's blinking them eyes, man, because he out his coming and he blink his eyes and he'll look. And there's one of the respiratory therapists zooming in. And he's like, yeah, man, I like that. And I'm like, bro, you hear that all. You know, I know. I'll be liking when you in there. So, man, you
wow.
building fans and don't know. You building fans and don't
That's
know.
That's crazy.
All right. Now let's do this, man. Let's get on this doggone cooking. Because this dude here, y'all think I can do some stuff? I still haven't tried it. I've been wanting to try it, but when I saw his in the pan, it's kind of feeling a little intimidating, like we was talking about the drummers earlier. And I ain't tell you this story, man. I'm playing with a serious band. We doing a show at the hotel right across from Astroworld. It's a big fashion show, and all they got these hairstylists from all over. And the band I'm with, we playing, man. I mean, we got a set, dude. We got a setup, man. The way they mic my kit, they used to call me Bam Bam, and the bass player was like Bam Bam. They kit sounds so good, man. Whatever you want to do, just do it. I don't care. Cause there was times, man, I could get a little out there. And so
yeah.
I would stand up on my seat and spin around and fall back down. I would do all kinds of crazy stuff. So, man, I'm kicking it, got my groove going. And like I say, Sonny Emery was like, you know, the guy I looked up to as far as drum.
Yeah.
Sonny Emery did all that. Man, this little scrawny kid was playing for my cousin. And she had a little three-piece that she was doing. And this little skinny kid come up. And I play for these people. And I was like, all right, go ahead, little dude. And hurry up so I can get back on my kit. So this dude sat down and started playing. Man, I ain't want to take that kid home no more. I ain't
want
to take it home no more. Everybody in the band was looking at me like, Bam Bam, that little dude on your kid. I was like, he could take it home with him. I don't care. It was Chris Dane, man. He was like,
I believe.
He was like 15. Back then, you know, and he telling me, I'm like, bro, I need to see, like, Now I need to learn from you. Whatever, man. That's the lie you can take to your grave. So
right.
It was kind of like that when I saw you unleash some oxtails. I'm like, man, I don't even want to try it, dog. I don't even want to try it. Not a bit. I'm like, this dude got mango flavor and all this stuff. Man, I don't want to step out there with that, man. I don't fool with that. Well, I said one day I might, but, man, I definitely got to get some of yours.
Oh, yeah. It's been a blessing,
man. Now, man. I'm putting my order in now, man. I just want them, man. Just, you tell me whatever. I'm cash-apping you. I'm getting them, man, just for the weekend. And I'll eat them.
You can have them this Saturday morning. You can pick them up Saturday morning if you want to.
All right. Well, I want the ice tails, man. I want the ice tails. I've been, man, it's been on my mind. And I've had so many things happening where, you know, I've been eating on the run. I finally cooked for myself, you know, this past weekend. I had fun with it, but I was like, man, if you sit on it, you're going to lose it. You know,
right.
let me get back out there and do some things. But, bro, give them the flavors that you put together, because you don't just do regular oxtails.
No. Well, it's more than just the oxtails, too. The flavors can go on anything you can think of. But I'm here known for peach preserved smoked oxtails, mango preserved oxtails. I have a sweet and spicy oxtail, and a barbecue flavor, and then I have a hurricane flavored oxtail. Hurricane is every last one of the sauces mixed together to make one. It's very good, and you can get that on shrimp, salmon, ribs, brisket. Anything. I got a pineapple smoked brisket that's banging, mango smoked salmon that's good, sweet spicy shrimp prawns, surf and turf mac and cheese, regular mac and cheese, greens, yams, corn, rice, whatever. It's whatever your flavor, man, I can make it shake. And people have been loving it. I started doing that catering stuff again last year during the pandemic when everything that I did for a living was shut down. The barbershop was closed. Wasn't no restaurant, so I couldn't gig. Churches was closed. But, shit, I still had to work. I had a family to provide for. Child support still need to be paid. So, I mean, I know I can cook. I love to cook. I've always cooked. So I started doing my food, man, and that took off, man. And people have been loving it. Now I'm catering to events and weddings and parties and even as of today, people put in their orders for Thanksgiving already. And so, you know, people paying Thanksgiving orders, Christmas orders. I'm booked all the way with the food up until April. I got a 200-person wedding in April. And the very next week, I got another 150 for a birthday party. Stuff is rocking, man, with the food. And they loving everything that we're doing, man. I've been shipping food stuff, you know, as far as Seattle and D.C. and Philly and Detroit, St. Louis, Los Angeles. So, yeah, man, we everywhere with it.
Man, that's a tremendous blessing. Hey, I see my callers. Hey, like I said, if y'all want to holler at Ronnie or holler at me or just say something, 319-527-6722. That's the number to come on in. Just press the mic. And I bring in and, you know, quit being so doggone shy, y'all. Scary ass. But, yeah, man, that's the thing during the pandemic. Man, I'm a fool on my show, dog. This ain't no, you know, PG-rated TV, whatever. You want to say it,
yeah.
Say it. Or, you know, that's how I get down. So let the people know.
Yeah, everybody books me. For the food stuff, you can find me on Instagram at colemanscatering.htx. Again, that's colemanscatering.htx on Instagram. That's how you put your orders in, see the videos, all that stuff. Even with the barbershop, Merlo's Barbershop, on all social media, you can book your appointment off of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or Google. You can book your appointment by just clicking the book tab. That's how you can book your appointment with me. And with the music stuff, man, it's Merlo Music HTX on all social media. Or you can just Google Ronnie Coleman Jr. I'm literally everywhere. If you want to hear my music and ride with it, add it to your catalog, which I highly suggest you do. Whatever streaming platform you use, whether that's Tidal, Instagram, Amazon, YouTube, Google Play, iTunes, Napster, whatever, just type in Ronnie Coleman Jr. and you can get all of my music. Some platforms, I don't know why, they have two of me, but all of it's me, but you got to add the Jr. Because if you don't, the bodybuilder come up, and I got the body, but I ain't building nothing. So you got to put Ronnie Coleman Jr.
Body got a
regular you can get all
too.
Of
it.
Yeah, straight
hey,
up.
Check
so.
This out. Here's another question I want to throw out to. Where did the name Merlo Music come from?
Okay. I get that asked a lot. In 2008, I put out my first album called Preface. I was fortunate enough and blessed enough to have it be reviewed. I was on a bunch of magazines, Smooth Jazz Magazine, Downbeat Magazine, stuff like that. And one of the reviews about my record was that my music was like a glass of Merlot, smooth, relaxing, and refreshing. So I liked how that sounded. It was different. No one had it. And me being a business-minded person and person that always likes business, I know with stuff that you wanted to grow, you got to make it easy for people to say, and that's catchy, that's different. I didn't have two names with it. You know, it's easier to say Merlot than saying Ronnie Coleman Jr. You know what I'm saying? You say McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Burger King. That's it. You know what I'm saying? It rolls off the tongue. It's a head nod and it's it. And so with hearing Merlot, that's something that brings automatic thought to be classy. It's nice. It rings with you. It stays with you. And then once you see us play, we try to get you as drunk off my music as possible. So that's how Merlot came. And then people just automatically assumed that was my name. And so I just kept it. I rolled with it, did my trademark to it and copyrighted it. So, you know, it'll be me. So Merlot Music is me, is my band, it's what I brainchild, it's what I developed. And then, you know, when I opened up my barbershop, it was natural for me to say Merlot's Barbershop because everyone literally around the world know me as Merlot. And so, hey, well, this is my shop. So it's just something that rolls and keeps rolling.
Are y'all gigging anywhere, anytime in the near future that people that's listening, they can come check y'all out?
Fortunately and unfortunately, at this time, I don't have anything in the city because we play Houston a lot for a long time. So I don't know why, but all of my gigs, thank God, has been we've been started to be branched out into other regions of the states. I think the next gig I even have with my band is like New Year's Eve in Killeen. And then we got other cities and states outside of that. You know, we got New Orleans coming back up. We did New Orleans a couple months ago. We're trying to go back to Colorado. I got hit up a few days ago about doing some stuff in like Alabama, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Detroit, you know, Chicago, at Cultures in Chicago, the City Winery in D.C., New York, Spaghettini's in L.A., you know, spots like that. So that's, you know, we've made it to a degree outside of the cover band situation because I'm an actual artist, you know, so we're getting to play rooms and venues, the Knack Theater in Dallas, Freeman's, you know, Sandaga's, where, you know, they like covers cool, but they respect, you know, original artistry more. And so me being an artist, I'm moving, you know, slowly through the ranks of being able to come up, you know, and play my music as opposed to getting paid $100 to play somebody else.
Thank you. I was going to touch on that. The music scene in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I I speak out, and we don't need no disclaimer, no the views and opinions. Or those. They're my damn opinions. It's a
right.
flabby, fickle-ass town when it comes to entertainment. Not just music, but all forms of entertainment. It's fickle. And it's sad that in this city, you know, you only have a small handful that really appreciate originality, quality, infused with originality, that will come out and support live music. You know, like I said, if you're doing the cover tunes that they know or whatever, they'll come here. But 9 out of 10, they ain't even paying to come here. Because, you know.
No, this is going out to be out.
They going out to be out and just having to be a band there. Some places, for what the musicians get to play in them venues, it really ain't worth it when you back in your time and your setup, you know, two sets, three sets, none of that. So, for a local musician, the road is much better because not only does it pay better, you get to open up a little bit more because after those same people that hear you free all the time, they play the same thing over and over. Well, if you can pay, then we could do something different. You know, but when you go on the road, it's just appreciated more. And you get a chance to get, you know, a change of pace, change of venue. And really, a lot of those shows can never be duplicated because it's the vibe and appreciation for those people. That's why I like KTSU Public Radio, but we wouldn't hear Ronnie Coleman Jr. or Jalando Johnson or Kyle Turner, Kerry Wilkins, you know, Pat Williams. You know, we wouldn't hear none of that if it wasn't for public radio here. But you go to other cities, and you're like, man, who is that? Oh, he's a local.
Yeah.
He got, they giving him a spot on mainstream radio. They giving him a spot. Yeah. Y'all, no, bro. No. So, that's a plus to be able to get out, travel or whatever, you know, and let your music just spread around, man. That's a good thing. Something else I wanted to touch on too. As a musician, you just a busy ass dude. Let's just say, how do you balance? Because you, in my opinion, you're still a newlywed. You ain't been married that long. So, how do you balance the career, the music, the barber? The cooking, you know, everything that you do, how do you balance that in with marriage?
I mean, for me, it's just, it has to be communication and understanding of communication. That's key, because I'm busy, and I'm always busy, and I work for myself. I've been self-employed for a very long time, you know what I'm saying? So if I don't work, I don't eat. So it has to be a point of communication between myself and her, my wife Casey, to understand what's what, and what needs to go down and what I'm going to do. And then it also has to be some times where I got to sacrifice and just take time off and you know, let it be known that, you know, I care, I love you, I'm here, I want to be, you know, doing stuff that matters to her. You know, working is what matters to me. Providing financially, you know, as much as possible matters to me. But also providing experiences and stuff that don't cost money I value that even more, because a price tag don't mean shit if the heart behind it ain't there. You know what I'm saying? It's like you buy me a something out the Galleria, you know, out the Gucci store, Louis Vuitton, but, you know, if there's no heart or connection to understand about anything or give it from the right place, that is that item is really less value than what you even paid for it, and that don't even matter. And so between that and just trying to find a balance and understand and being as clear with communication and understanding on both parts is a balancing act, man, between, you know, working the music, working the food, working, you know, the barbershop, and balancing school and hustling and trying to gig, you know, at the same time. You know what I mean? It's sometimes everything works on all cylinders at the same time, and they can be kind of chaotic. And then sometimes it's this week I might have 2-3 gigs. This week I might got 4-5 caterings. When the music ain't going, the food going. When the food and the catering ain't going, the shop is rocking. You know what I'm saying? So it's a stutter step. You know, it's just, I just wanted to be able to have a situation where I can constantly be able to provide as much as I can. And being self-employed, it means sometimes stuff rocking and some stuff ain't. So I needed to have something or some things that when something ain't rocking, I'm still rocking. And as long as you make an honest attempt and be intentional with the communication and you know, understanding, giving and receiving, you mean it, shit is going to work out. That don't mean you ain't going to have no bumps and no rolls with it. But it's how you roll with it that you know, you keep going.
Yeah. Here's something else too that people don't get. Even to get to this point.
Yeah.
You already knew it. That's why you popped the question. You have her support in what you do. You know, you have her support, and she's showing you, you know, that, hey, I'm down with my fiance, my dude, my husband, with the music, with the barbering, the cooking, you know, all that beforehand. That's where a lot of musicians and artists fall, you know, into the devil's hole, I call it. Because a lot of women will be like, I'm going to tolerate it till we get married, and I'm cutting all that shit out. Ain't going to be no more damn music. But you know your mate. You know your mate. She was supportive. You know, I see y'all out when y'all was dating, coming out to hear some music, whatever.
Yeah.
And you can tell when a person is just there to appease the other person. Oh, when they're having a good time, you know, and she's having a good time, listening to everything, and then I'm out of here, man, y'all bounce, you know. So that was already set in place. So she, you know, she likes what you do, she supports it. That's so important with entertainment now, that the person that you're going to be with, and I'm talking to the fellas and the women, that they support what you do, they appreciate it, and they support it because, like you say, that might be some time, man, that gig going to be lean.
Yeah.
That gig going to be lean. Now, them days of, you know, dude running out the back door and you ain't getting money, I'm over with now. But just some of them gigs be lean, and you take them because you want everybody else to be able to eat.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it just comes down. Even before that, she'll tell you, it's been gigs where I've made sure my band went home with more money than I did. You know what I'm saying? But
that's what I'm saying.
It worked out. It works out in the end where I've been able to be blessed and get some places and do some things that people that have paid money couldn't even get to. And it all starts with one thing that's key on all that. Her supporting me and all of that is cool, and I appreciate it because she's definitely been a real life rock to a lot of situations through, you know, the times that we've been together. But it all started with me knowing who I am at first and holding on to that. Because I was this before I met her, and I knew this is what I was going to be until the Lord called me home. You know what I'm saying? So if you're not going to be down with me, knowing me and being me, and this is what it's going to be, ain't no use in wasting either one of our time. You know what I'm saying? I've been a barber. I've been self-employed. At this point, I don't even know how to go to a regular job interview or do an application, I can't tell you where the hell my resume at for a regular job, because I've been this way for so long. You know what I'm saying? I hadn't worked for nobody, man, since October 1st, 2008. And I put out my first record Thanksgiving 2008, and I ain't looked back since. You know what I'm saying? So I'm coming up on you know, all these years, damn near 20 years of being self-employed. I don't know how to be nothing else. You know what I'm saying? All I know is an honest hustle and to handle my business. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I know who I am as a person. I know who I am as a musician, as an artist. I know what's what with me, and I'm willing to give and use all the parts that are me to do all that I can that is us. And if you can't understand that, ain't no use in us even having any further conversation. We can go and get a benediction to this shit now and be done with it. But that hasn't been the case. So, it's, you know, it comes with understanding, like I said earlier. And if the understanding first starts with you and knowing who you are before you try to bring somebody along or tag somebody along for this journey that is going to be life.
Yeah. And then when you gift it, man, I mean, the person that claims to show interest in you or whatever, they need to recognize that gift just like everybody else recognizes that gift, and then do whatever needs to be done to further enhance that, and vice versa. There's so many people out here now, I'm going to shut that down once I lock them down. Man, no, no, you never put a lid on growth.
No.
And you never try to destroy the gift. That's why you see people, Christmas, excited about a gift, because it means something. So the same with a gift that's embedded in you from birth, man, if anything, you dig that out and you showcase it. You know, and I applaud you for everything that you do, everything that you do. Man, you always got a good attitude around me, smiling the whole nine yards. And you're putting out good music. You're looking out for people less fortunate than us. I mean, you're always doing it, man. I'm glad I had you on my show tonight.
Yeah.
You know, if it's one thing you can leave the listeners with, what would it be?
It would be two parts to that. One, I believe in God. So, if you got questions about find somebody to get to know them, because I guarantee you won't be. And then, man, go listen to my new record, When I'm With You, featuring Frank McComb and Mark Jordan. Man, we up for global musical performance of this year and best traditional R&B tomorrow, man. So we trying to bring a Grammy back to Houston. And you can just rock, man. This is the Chief Feature and Frank McComb and Paul Gravities.
Man, I'm going to tell you, I was kind of embarrassed to say it earlier. We talked earlier today, but I'm in the retarded group. My homeboy said I got to start being politically correct if I don't want people beating down my show. But like he said, I can't say midgets. I got to say small people, little people, whatever. So retarded might not be the right word, but that's all I can think of. I came up during that era when retarded was retarded. So I think I'm in a retarded group, because I'm probably the only person that don't have an Apple account. I got it and don't know the password. But when you sent it to me, I was trying to open it up. And I got a MacBook Pro. That's the sad part. So I'm gonna pull When I'm With You up. And y'all do the same. Ronnie Coleman Jr., Frank McComb, When I'm With You. Y'all pull that up, man. Buy it, download it, whatever, stream it, pay for it. So that this man can get a Grammy, you know, then I can say I had a Grammy Award winner on my show, you know, and that I know him. And then when he get that Grammy, you know, we have a little celebration, man, and I make them burgers and Boudin and everything else. But I'm talking shit. Still, man, I am glad to have you on tonight and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I will always be supporting, you know, live music, projects, everything. Just holler at me. I was trying to get Big Boy Strut in to do the intro with, but I couldn't. It wasn't working, and I was like, I ain't finna keep fighting with all these tech issues, man. I figured you was already in. So, man, I'll have you back on another time. Matter of fact, you know, I got the other podcast, Three Fools and a Mic, and we do that. Yeah. We shoot that live, person to person. So, yeah, we'll be at the spot and can do that, too. And also, you know, people realize, that really know me, yeah, I'm deep into music. You know, I still, every now and then, I might sit on the kit and do some work. But comedy has been my life since 1993. And I'm actually in the process of putting together, because I want this to work in Houston, Jokes and Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, get that call, bro. We ready to do some work.
Let's go. I'm always down. I love playing home. I just don't get to.
Yeah. Jokes and Jazz. And we're going to change the culture here, man. We're going to make people appreciate what we do. Don't make sense for, you know, the hot venues in Houston to have free entry, $5 entries, or $10 entries, but then you got spies, you know, $700 to $800 a person. And I ain't talking about big venues like Smart and all that.
Yeah.
Other spots. And out-of-town artists come in, and everybody flock to them. You got the same talent in this goddamn city.
And most of the
and
time,
y'all
it's
don't
better
know
talent.
Because y'all don't come out and support. I didn't want to say that. But better talent.
I see it.
But the people feel like we live in a name. Yeah, we live in a name-driven city where if you ain't already made it, don't give a damn about you. You know, don't give a damn about you.
It's a bandwagon situation.
There you go. It's name-driven. So, you know, and I hate to hit on the one we hit on earlier because he ain't done nothing to nobody, and I don't want to put him out like that. But they rather flock there, you know, than to come see you somewhere else because they feel like I'm somebody or the in crowd is there, and that's where it's happening. And I've been in smaller spots watching bands just kill it. And I'm like, man, if the people really knew what they missing, this local talent smoking, you know. And a lot of times when, and it's sad that in this city, Houston people will come see the same artist every 3-4 months do the same exact set. The same exact set and that money. But they don't want to come see you. And you can promote your joint, man, for 5 months, 6 months in advance, pre-sale and all that. I ain't paying that kind of money. See
man, that's what happened when I did my live DVD show. I had 8 people on stage, 9 including myself. It was an all original show, no covers, all my hits that I was playing thus far. Beyonce was in town that same night. It's people that I know personally that went to see Beyonce and told me my ticket prices was $50, was too high. But you paid $150 to sit in the nosebleeds to see Beyonce. Got dressed up. Beyonce don't know you, don't care about you. And you sung the same songs as you sing on the radio. All you married women went and sung single. You sung Single Ladies while she went home to her husband. Well, you could have came and seen your homeboy got a greater show. Been out early, didn't have to have no parking issue. And you know what I'm saying? You would rather go do that then come to the show with somebody that you know that would appreciate it more to see your face in the venue than you sitting in the nosebleeds with Beyonce, who don't give a rat's behind about you, nor does she know you.
Rat's ass. I told you this is my show. Tell it how you want to tell it, goddammit. Because look here, I've dealt with that shit so much, bro. I mean, I'm real, dude. I'm 100. I'm the old shaman with Mr. Whipple, goddamn. I'm legit. Man, I have invited people out to see me at Comedy Club. It's no longer open now. But I headlined that club for almost 10 years, man. You know, earn my stripes, everything. And I'll be inviting people out. And it's $15, two drink minimum, whatever. And do you know, people would tell me, these people that are supposed to be down with me, 100, whatever, they would tell me, and we went to the Improv in South Goose. Damn, I know them tickets, $40, $50 a piece. Then, because you're black, they put the different menu out that's going to charge you instant gratuity, and the price of everything go up because they say blacks don't tip. So they got two different menus. I don't care. I'll put it out there. They got two different menus for the blacks and the whites. And when Biff Stevens come, tickets ain't but $15. But they kill on us because they know we name-driven and we flock that shit. So, them. But then I can remember back in the day, you know, wouldn't come see me when it was $5 to get in, you know, to a certain club to watch me perform, or $10. And certain nights I would call you out to come. It's free. Just come on out to watch me work. And I would get phone call, and I changed my number, and people still, hey, I'll just call and holler at you. Oh, really? Man, I know what's coming in. Yeah, your boy over at the arena, he coming in. You ain't got no hookup? And hell no. Yeah, I'm on the show opening for him, but I ain't giving no tickets away no more. Backstage passes. Hell, y'all don't come support me. Y'all come to see me. You know what I'm saying? Kiss my ass.
Some people not gonna respect you till people they respect you.
Until they see you and the Grammy for contemporary jazz goes to you know, Ronnie Coleman, Julian Framework. Man, I know him. I know he played in my church.
Until people they respect, till they know the people that they respect you, they ain't gonna respect you. Some people they feel you gotta get big enough for them to respect you when you done more than what they done never even thought about doing already.
Yeah.
For me to be a guy at 20 years old, I had Tuesdays at the original Red Cat. Before Pat Williams had a group, all these people, when he was still playing with Brotherhood and Ken Munshine and, you know, all these other people, I had my own night. I've been putting out records since 2008. You know what I'm saying? And that ain't no slight at Pat, because that's my boy. His record finna drop, that I wrote a song on that record. You know, I've been doing what I've been doing. A lot of the cats that, you know, call themselves being cool with me, a lot of them cats really hate because they was following the young guy. They didn't feel like, you know, the young guy should get the look that I got. But I had a band. I was rocking Phil and Derrick's at the original location from the time it opened to a year before it closed, right when Phil sold it. I was rocking Four Fridays over there, that was bringing him and everybody else in there. Plenty of money. You know what I'm saying? I done put out records. I'm doing shows. Yeah. I'm being on TV. I've been on every TV station in the city, every radio station in the city, KPFT to KTSU to KPVU to from the Wave to KSBJ to whatever you can think of. I'd have been on that. You know what I'm saying? So it's, and I'm not even 40 years old yet. You know what I'm saying? I just turned 37. Just turned 37 in August. So, I mean, I'm a young old man at this point.
Yeah, big shout out to Donna Franklin and Kyle Turner.
Oh, yeah.
They do. You know, they put it down for the local artists, you know.
Donna's been the person that keep me on TSU. I tell anybody, Donna, the reason I got on KTSU was because of Donna. Every record that I put out, Donna has been the one to break that on TSU and play it when nobody else. Donna Franklin is the one that put me on TSU. You know what I'm saying? Jeff Kelly and Guy Michaels, but most so Jeff Kelly was who broke me at KPVU. Matter of fact, I got to call him tomorrow because I seen him Sunday. But, yeah, Jeff Kelly put me on at PV, and he the one that shared me with the Connects in New York, in Detroit, in D.C., all of them cats. He broke me to those guys. You know what I'm saying? So, man, I got major love for Jeff Kelly and Donna Franklin. You know what I'm saying? Because they, when nobody else would give your boy a shot, especially here locally, they did. And they rode the wave with me. They've been riding the wave with me. Donna Franklin hosted my live DVD. She was the MC for my event. You know what I'm saying? And she done put in me some other doors.
Yeah.
Just like Big Al Campbell. Al Campbell showed me major hella love continuously over the years when many of them didn't. Joe Carmouche and Al Campbell's who put a lot of doors in the mix for your boys. When I got to Philly there, Kyle was the one that put the word to give me the, you know, talk to Phil to bring me on because I had a band and we was rocking. And then we started killing harder than a lot of other people as young guys. You know what I'm saying? So,
well, I told you, Harry turned me on to you. Harry turned me on to you. But I'm saying, you're 37 years old, I'm 54. So,
yeah,
it might be true to you. It might be true with you. But you know Al Campbell got that lie he tell everybody. Man, I raised this boy from me. So, yeah, you 37. So, yeah, he got you. But he tell that. I met him when I was 16, man. But, he's a big influence, man. Awesome dude, great dude. You know, and that's why I dedicated Tuesday is, you know, it's Musician Spotlight because I want all y'all on here, man. I want you. Kyle already said he coming. You know, I got Lloyd Hughes and Al, everybody.
Lloyd is another undercover sneaker, man. Lloyd always show love on the back end. You know what I'm saying? There's been events that I've had that Lloyd provided sound for. I ain't even asking. But he did it, you know, to make sure, you know, the young brother got a good look. And we went out there and played.
And he don't be wanting to take no money from
it. Nah, you almost got a fist fight.